Well, good morning, everybody. It is Tuesday, January 21st, 2020. We are in the Board of County Commissioners conference room. All the commissioners are present. It is our general discussion. 9 a.m. Item 1 is to be removed from the agenda because of a delay. So we'll get that one rescheduled, our community development quarterly update. Item 2 is the juvenile justice quarterly update. Just got moved to the front. Hope you're not nervous. Please come on up.
I'm speechless.
I doubt it.
Good morning, commissioners.
Good morning.
Good morning.
We're in a different spot.
Yeah, we shuffled the chairs.
Take a while to get used to. So, yeah, it's kind of a where do I start?
Beginning. Hi, I'm Jim Goodwin.
Director of Josephine County Juvenile Justice.
Born in a little hospital in Josephine County, Oregon.
That's right. So, yeah, I figured I'd just give a quick, as you know, we have several subdivisions, mini departments, whatever you want to call them. I just run down kind of each one of them, where we're at, and where we think we're going for this year. And so court and field services, juvenile justice, proper, probation, court work. Our numbers are up a little bit. We're working with about 130 kids right now. And that number has gone really between 100 and 125 over the last 5-6 years. So we're seeing a little bit of uptick. My explanation for that is Sheriff's Department being online, and we are actually getting referrals from them now, which is I don't want to say that's a good thing, because when a kid gets in trouble, that's not a good thing, but it's been going on for years and we just haven't been able to work with them. And now that they're online with their SRO out there and their resident deputies, we're seeing
school resource officer.
Yes, school resource officer. The sheriff does have one online for the three schools right now. I think he's running a little bit thin. He's covering a lot of ground when you go between basically Wolf Creek and,
Illinois Valley.
Murphy and Ivy and all of that. So, but we really are functioning at an extremely high level in probation and court services. I can't say enough for the job that the folks are doing there, and which was a good thing with all the change we had the last couple of years. So we look forward to just keeping on when it comes to that program. Still the same numbers. We have 4.5 probation officers, 2 support staff, and 1 admin in that office. In detention, our numbers are, again, always very chaotic. I think before the 3-day weekend, we had 4 kids in. We came in this morning, we had 9. And so it's just always, up and down, 14 bed capacity. So
those, of course, the 5 additions you have, are they going to be long term things? You haven't evaluated them yet.
A little of both. Yeah, we had a couple reason really for the log jam. We had some pretty heinous charges come in the last few weeks, and those are cases that you have for a while, and so they sit in detention a lot longer than your average case, where we'll get them in. Get them evaluated, check out the home, release them on conditions, while they're awaiting court. We just have several kids right now that we're not able to do that yet, just because of the possible community risk.
You keep them housed?
Yes. Until, okay. So, for instance, probably at least two out of the 3 will, they'll be referred directly to the Oregon Youth Authority. Very, very serious charges, and we don't have, there's a limit to our community treatment options when you have a kid like that, and there's just far more services available at the state level, and so.
Well, I think to the kid, it's far more serious, too.
Yes, it is.
They go, oh, right. Must have really done something wrong here if the Josephine County wants to step right. me up the ladder.
Yeah. So our 30-day program, 30-day secure detention program, I'm sure you remember about that. That is functioning very well. We only have 1 kid in the program right now. If you remember, I came to you all a few months ago about contracting with some out-of-county youth if we had the space. And we have our fourth one in right now. That's actually from Ada County. So we're pushing about $20,000 in revenue that was not there before because of the program. We always take our kids first. We haven't been in a situation where we've had to bump anyone because we have the capacity right now. But just to break the lid on an idea that I have that I will be bringing to the board a little bit later, I wanted to talk with Ryan Johnson ahead of time before I brought an official proposal. But that revenue, we have a kid in for the 30 days. It's about $4,500 per kid for the 30 days. So we're up to about $20,000 now. And that we put the program together after we put the budget together. So this really isn't, it's not accounted for anywhere as income in our budget. And we do have a capital project that's been on our wish list for several years now, and it's a horticulture program where we expand our detention yard, put in raised beds, put in a greenhouse. There's some really cool work that happens when kids grow things, mm-hmm. and the Department of Ed is really in support of that. So we work that through our juvenile detention education program and do some, you know, have kind of a vocational piece in there. So the ask, I think, would be instead of just having that money lost back to the general fund, is that we use the revenue from the 30-day detention program to expand the detention program.
Yeah, that is a separate account.
Yeah. Yeah. And, I mean, I feel like that could be easily accounted for.
Sure.
You know, even if it was, we do the project in phases, and as we get a contract kid, we pay facility services back. I think it'll be a pretty stable, you know, source of income going forward. So,
do you have a staff member that's excited about it as well?
Yes.
Okay, good. Because it takes someone with a greenish.
Yes. Oh, absolutely. No, mm-hmm. we have some folks. We have. Okay. They have to go through a pretty rigorous background check when they come in and volunteer. But we've got
all the way to their gardening ability.
We've got master gardeners that are dying to come in there, and
that's
what I was going to ask. Though.
And community members that. which brings me to my next.
Now, I'm just going to be mean here.
Okay.
But I can see a young person saying, I can't wait to learn how to grow the proper way to grow marijuana.
Mm.
And he's not looking at growing green beans or mm-hmm. sweet peas or something after getting into agriculture. He's going to get mm-hmm. into the agriculture that where there's the most money and where, you know, we're not giving him a leg up to start his own business selling right. to the black market.
Right.
I mean, with hemp and everything, yeah, it's all legal.
Right.
But that's, you know, that's in the marble halls, it's all what it is. But the people on the street know different,
mm-hmm.
or think they know different. So I didn't want it to kick back and say, now you're teaching the kids to grow dope.
Well, on paper, we won't be doing that.
No, on paper, you won't. But,
and it's illegal.
But, you know, I think part of the program needs to, not telling you what to do, but part of the program needs to be the merits of regular agriculture. Like,
right.
you know,
oh, yes.
Krauss and whatnot. Look what Krauss has done. He
right.
he makes probably every bit as much money as the whatever.
Mm-hmm.
When they grow the stuff, they've done it with the elementary schools and some of the other schools, and the kids see the stuff start coming out that they
right,
planned.
Right.
It does something to the kids. Mm-hmm. And some of these kids that are junior high school that are in your detention and shelter right now who've had not a very normal upbringing in comparison with other kids, it's showing them something different. And mm-hmm. it is showing them, it has a potential of getting them involved and getting them to care about something other than themselves or video games or something else like that. And it absolutely is teaching responsibility and such. Sadly, when I was a PO, I had a kid come in on my caseload that was 18, and he was just looking forward to doing the family business. And, you know, it wasn't legal in any way in his family, since he said his 15-year-old sister was working it. And But it's still, we know that they're going to be growing vegetables and things, especially if you guys get to the point that you can grow enough that you can feed it in the table inside. Mm-hmm. And they're like, you guys grew this food we're eating. That has an impact.
You know, one of the things we could do, too, and again, with in conjunction with, like, say, our county fair,
mm-hmm.
Have a an awards table or a section in the agricultural thing, these were grown by kids, mm-hmm. by the youth juvenile department or whatever.
Right.
And have a spot, and you get in a challenge with Oregon Youth Authority has a garden, I think, mm-hmm. out there, too.
They do.
So get a little challenge
we
going.
Feel
get
we
little,
can
get
do
little,
better. We can do better.
You'll throw it down.
Vegetable Olympics. But, yeah. you know, it is really neat to watch stuff grow, but it also can... Yeah. And make you hate vegetables, because I used to have to take care of right. a garden, quite a big garden when I was a kid. I can't stand vegetables.
Really?
Really.
Apparently they're good for you. So.
Right. So in that same vein, with the gardening, we are our newest staff member, our weekend supervisor, Sky Andren, I put him on expanding our community service programs. And we have one of the things that we've done, now these are kids that are on probation that are either working off fines, fees, court order, community service, that kind of thing. We've had a partnership with Raptor Creek Farms out there by the food bank for a couple of years where they go out. Our staff are right there supervising them, but they're also supervised by staff there. And they've helped out really throughout the year from starting in about May going through about September. But what Sky has done, our new supervisor, is expanded that, and they're going to give us, these will be for our residential kids in the residential program and or community service kids. They're going to designate, I think, 3 or 4 beds to our kids. And the master gardeners are coming in, and so it'll be a start-to-finish idea with conversation with legal. I'm not sure if our kids can sell their produce at the growers market, if there's anything, but his idea was even to go that far in the summertime. It's right across the street where they could actually go right from putting the seed in the ground to actually see.
Could they do it? They can't actually sell it, but can they just run it through the normal food bank program, and the food bank give that money to your, I'm sure you feed your kids.
Yeah.
You have a cafeteria there,
right.
So instead of going down and order stuff through the commissary, you order it through them, because
right.
and it's a trade-off basis.
Mm-hmm. And we're talking about that, too.
Actually getting paid for it, however.
Right. Well, whatever, it's just, you know, what we do with the final product is a little bit up in the air, but I think there's a lot mm-hmm. of options there. And so we're pretty excited about that. And, again, there's some volunteers that are really anxious to
when those kids could challenge the rest of the garden to see who's yeah. growing the greatest.
Right, right.
No sneaking anything in.
We
no.
could grow pumpkins and carve them at Halloween. Pumpkins grow pretty easy.
Right?
Yep.
So also in residential...
And they never go away.
Yeah, they never stop.
We are, our residential program, Turning Point, we are about neck deep in an accreditation process right now that is really a monster, but it's the direction that the state's going when you take their kids... You know, Department of Human Services kids, or Oregon Youth Authority kids for that matter. And so we're working to be what they call a QRTP, Qualified Residential Treatment Program, which will get us, once we get the heavy lift of the accreditation process over, going forward, it gives us a higher bed rate, daily bed rate, and you can do some additional services with the kids. It's kind of the direction through some state legislation that's been a monster to deal with. The Family First Act, if you've heard of any of that, started at the federal level, and then some state senators here took off with it. And it sets the bar about as high as anybody can possibly jump. And so to meet that standard, you really do have to go through the accreditation
process.
But
if you were ever called to task, that works in your favor.
It certainly does, right. And what the state did, which was shocking to a lot of us, they said, okay, if you do this, we'll actually pay for it. And that kind of, usually they say, go ahead and do this and then figure out how to pay for it. But so they awarded non-competitive grants to the tune of $50,000 that we can bill to for the cost of the accreditation process. And then going forward, it's they'll help with that too. That's where the increased rate that we would get comes in, because it costs a couple thousand a year to stay accredited, just like with a police agency or anything like that. So our folks are working really hard on that project right now. Our site visit, I think, is set for May. And so we've done tons and tons of policy work on the front end and working with this agency that's back east. And then they'll come out, do a site visit, give us our final punch list, and then we'll go from there. So
well, we've all dealt with accreditation process over right. across the parking lot. So.
Right.
And we see the value of it.
Yeah. They're a super heavy lift and very time consuming, but I think it'll be worth it once we get through it. Other than that, the residential program running pretty smoothly. We're stabilized with staff really for the first time after that initial year, 18-month turnover that was pretty chaotic for us. Pretty stable with staff and training, staff development going very well. Any questions up to that point?
No, sir.
On to prevention. So, as you know, all of our county high schools and the feeder middle school are staffed with school resource officers.
School outsource.
School.
Wait, not resource officers. That's the sheriff's office. Outreach officers. There we go. Something.
I think so.
It's an O, whatever it is.
Again, some teams that are working. We're working out some kinks with the differences between the districts because it's just a different, it's a different animal in D7 than it is in Three Rivers, resource wise and all of that. So, we're figuring out how to best use our people here for District 7. But Three Rivers is still Superintendent Dave out there is still just couldn't be happier with our product that we put out so far.
Do you ever do any studies, like for instance, when you get a troubled youth in and find out how connected he is with the school? In other words, is he really understanding what they're trying to put out, or is he just a little bit slow and needs a different style of teaching? For that, you know, I'll use the very close friend of mine, and she said, gee, how do you know so much about history? I said, it's a story. But it was never taught to her as a story. It was taught to her as memorizing dates.
Mm-hmm.
And she never got the connection of Lewis and Clark and pioneers mm-hmm. and what mm-hmm. they did. If it would have been a story and told to her all in one group, she would have never forgotten it. And she'd have been, when the teacher told her to raise her hand, you know, and say, I'm going to call on you. What did you get out of the homework I gave you last night? Embarrassment beyond recognition. Mm-hmm. Wanted to drop out of school because, you know what, I can't answer the questions that they're asking them because they just didn't understand. And it was the way they were taught, not mm-hmm. what they were taught. Do you ever do anything on that? Just say, you know, there's something in school that you're not getting. And, oh, yeah, well, and if they come back at you, you know, madder than all get out, it's right. a frustration that they don't get it. But you finally connect with that kid, and he goes, that's what you've been trying to tell me.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's as simple as it gets.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, my gosh. Then they have a thirst for it. Until you get to that point, our education system keeps on what's wrong. And I just wonder if you do anything on the tail end of it, after some of the damage may have been done, is that's part of the damaging circumstance that led that youth to you, right. where if he really understood and he was part of his classroom and his classmates, he wouldn't be singled out as a dummy.
Right. And we do. So these part of the kind of core duties of these positions, it kind of works with the truancy ordinance that we went through last year. Also, once a kid reaches a certain point, we finally have buy-in from the district to sit down and look at them and say, okay, is this the right setting? Number one, where they should be. Is there an alternate setting that where they could be better served? And we've got great buy-in from Three Rivers on that also, where it's, if you remember, some of the comment from the public was, oh, you just want, the school district wants all that money because they want to keep the kid in the seat because there's ADM attached to it, you mm-hmm. know, where they get paid for every kid that's in the desk. And the whole idea is what's best for that individual kid. And we see kids chronically truant because of that. Not necessarily because they don't want to be there, but they're just not being served in the right way.
Jot me down. I need to have a sit-down with Mr. Goodwin sometime, if you don't mind.
No problem.
I'll even go to your house.
Okay. So Yeah, we're happy there. Things are going forward. We're really working with the district on how to measure this program so that we have something. Everybody wants to know recidivism numbers. What are you doing? How's it working? And in the world of prevention, that can be hard because when you prevent something, how do you know it was going to happen in the first place, right?
Yeah, you prevent
it. And so we're working with them on, you know, graduation rates. We think we'll see the dial move a little bit there and looking at some other areas where we can measure what we're doing. Anecdotally, the principals and vice principals are saying, yes, this was awesome. That kid would have never been in school without this team around them, or this kid wouldn't have graduated, or whatever. We hear that, right? But it's just understanding that sustainability going forward will probably need a little bit more than that. That's kind of one of the projects for this year is being able to measure things because that's what folks want to see. So that is prevention in a nutshell right now. Children's Advocacy Center, still working on with the county's new grant writer on our expansion project. We're at the phase planning phase where we're able to really apply for some of these bigger grants right now. And so the idea there is we thought we would, if this is going to be grant funded, let's shoot for the top first and see what happens. And so now we're talking about the possibility of working. We've got Ryan Johnson in our planning groups. The possibility of combining those two buildings on 4th and D with kind of a common courtyard in the middle, common entrance area, CASA on this side, CAC on the other side. CASA being private nonprofit opens up some other, if it's a joint project, it opens up some other funding opportunities that the county doesn't have because we're county government. And really excited at the prospect of that. I mean, the money's not in the bank yet, but we're working hard, and can't say enough about Amber, the work that she's put in on this.
Grant writer?
Yes, grant writer. Very, very helpful.
Well worth the money.
We have utilized her in a lot of different areas.
Well, there's a lot of people utilize her, and I'm glad that.
And I've got a list. This is just is just the beginning.
She's never without something to do.
Yeah. And so we did just, we kind of hit the jackpot this time. We lost our forensic interviewer at the CAC after only about 6 months, which was pretty tragic because it took a long time to find someone qualified for that. First round of interviews this time around, we found the right person. And so it was only open for about a month. The timing is just right because there's state-mandated trainings that are coming up in February and April. So we were able to onboard her in time for those trainings. So we'll be back up and running there. Good. And then the idea is, with the expanded grant income, is to pull on at least a half-time child advocate for that program down the road. That'll be another. That's for a few months down the road, though. Court mediation. Our one FTE program, I always just like to mention that because it's there and it's quiet and nobody knows much about it. But Crosby Smith, our court mediator, is still doing an outstanding job. That's the kind of job where no news is good news because the public has no problem complaining when they feel like their mediation process didn't go well. And we get almost none of that out of the program. So just real quickly, every case in Josephine County that's a divorce case that involves custody is mandated to go to mediation first to try to keep them out of court. And so that's what he does, is coordinates that whole program, goes through the process. He has very, very good luck with keeping that case out of court. Very few of them actually go to court and are contested.
Now, does it keep the whole case out of court or just the youth part of it, just the child?
It usually
part?
Keeps the whole case out of court.
Okay.
But because the finances and that whole thing, it's all in there. Spousal support, child support, all of that. They wrap it up in kind of one package. So he works really well with the attorneys, family court, and all of that. So that is court mediation. And then finally, just really quickly at the state level, my role as the current president of the Juvenile Directors Association. We've been really busy at the state level. A lot of changes in the law. Measure 11, the changes that happened there, that youth are no longer automatically waived to the adult court. There's a waiver hearing. Kid comes in on an egregious, you know, murder, rape, whatever. That case starts in juvenile now, where before it started in, since Measure 11 in 96 or something, they start in adult court and then can be knocked back down. Well, now those start in juvenile. If the DA wishes to waive that to an adult case, they schedule a waiver hearing. So that's a fundamental change. There's almost no directors in the state that have even really done waiver hearings, because Measure 11's been on the books for about 25 years now. But we don't have any pending cases. Those are kids that are 15, 16, or 17. And it's a list of the crimes that you would think they would be the most egregious ones. So a lot of work being done on implementation of that, how those waiver hearings look. As with any new law, it's long and complicated and has a lot of holes in it. So we're working on legislative fixes to little pieces here and there. And then just a FYI, they're doing a lot of work with expungements of juvenile records. So there's a bill that's about ready to, I think it is actually a bill now, that changes that process to anytime you have a kid that has not had a petition filed in court, but we're working with them on what we call formal accountability agreements. Lower level issues, they come in, we sit down with the parents, the kid, hey, we don't want you to go to court if you don't want to, so let's do this 6-month agreement to keep you out of court. All of those cases now, after this, and we're sure it's going to pass in February, will be automatically expunged at age 18. That changes things pretty fundamentally for us. Our organization is fighting hard for some funding attached to that, because for us that'll be at least a half an FTE. Because the expunction process takes, one expunction takes hours and hours and hours to do. And when you look at the number of those FAAs, kids that we work with, in a year we're talking usually in the hundreds level.
Just advocate here from the wrong side. Isn't that going to appear that you, as an organization, or us as a county or the state, is saying, you know what, when you get a guy, you know, you follow back in his record and he's done this, 17 DUIs, and he finally kills somebody, and you go back and expunge 16 of the DUIs, it makes it look like you did your job. But what if 17 DUIs show up, you go, what the heck does this guy have to do before you get attention? So when you expunge all of his prior stuff and it's no record of it anymore, then he does get caught doing something really bad because he didn't really take the program seriously. It doesn't look like he's that bad a kid, because then he only goes into court with one prior instead of, well, you know what? He had this history, and couldn't you see it coming? That's where it stops that public narrative. Even Ray Charles could see this one coming. And you, when you do that, isn't it just kind of covering your own tracks? I agree. I'm not disagreeing with the program.
There's certain criteria to have things expunged, though, correct?
Yeah.
There's been an assumption that things are automatically expunged if you're a youth, that you can't see misbehave. Right. That's not true.
So if a kid has ever had a petition filed, like, so the first time you come to us, we'll try an FAA. Second time, we file a petition. This doesn't mean that the FAA gets expunged at 18, and nothing gets expunged if he's actually gone to court, or she. And so, if that makes sense. So
it does. I'm looking at what does it look like to the public.
Right.
Not that they're even going to know about
it.
And again, you know, and you say, you know, hey, that kid is a bad seed.
Right.
I've lived next door to that little rug rat for I don't know how long, and he's this, and this, but there's no record of it.
Right.
So, well, they washed it clean.
Well, I can tell you an opposite experience where I had somebody that was pretty intense as an adult, and looking at their juvenile record, it's all there, but 24 referrals to juvenile were all counseled. And it's like, we failed. We failed that youth with 24 serious things, at which point did we intervene and say we're going to be involved more?
You can say you failed the youth, but you failed the people out here because 23 of those shouldn't have probably happened.
Well, that's not saying that they were against other victims necessarily. They could have been things
property
in the family
crime,
and
whatever.
I'm not saying just property crime. I mean, it could have been runaway. It could have been out of control youth.
Right.
I mean, it could have been every gamut. I don't see you guys necessarily doing that, but it is a serious concern of at which point is there 24 referrals and where did he ever get an intervention that said this isn't okay? And the explanation I got, well, they understood he came from a rough family.
That's creating an excuse for that, and we're not correct.
And granted, that was not recent.
Right. And you know, one of the kind of hot potato balls that used to get played is they'd refer that kid to maybe DHS, which doesn't have any...
Passing the buck.
Has no criminal, you know. Yeah. And so that's, as a policy, it's something that we don't do nowadays because we're not as... you know, we don't take always just the punitive approach, you're in trouble. We work with you first, you know, and you have to kind of escalate to go up that chain. plenty of them do, but plenty of them
You know, we're looking at today, you know, a guy does some heinous crime, like shoot up a theater, and everybody goes, we saw this coming.
Right.
And how many times had he been in, and it was just all of a sudden under the rug because he'll go away, and it didn't happen that way. So those are headlines,
right?
And we haven't had any headlines on your department in a long time, which is good.
Yes, that's very good.
Mm-hmm.
Keep us out of the paper.
It always be so.
Yes. Any questions about what we have cooking over at Juvenile?
I'm pretty well caught up on it.
I almost feel like each one, like, you know, we can do one update on prevention and we can do one on the other ones. We've kind of talked about that before. But anytime there's anything that you'd like to hear about, just let us know and we'll get the appropriate people in here.
Well, I'm excited about the expanded possibilities of that building, the CAC building.
Yeah.
That's good. Good for us.
It's a long time overdue.
Yep.
Is there a time frame? Have you heard?
I believe we're in a couple of grant cycles that we're going to go for.
Something
like
might
right
shake
now,
loose this
very,
year.
Very currently, yes. We could know in a couple of months whether we get, whether we have to do it in phases, where it all kind of depends on that, on that funding, how fast we can pull it off.
Gotcha.
Thank you.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Commissioners.
Good to see you.
Thanks, Aaron.
We'll set up a time where you and I can.
Okay.
Yeah.
Great.
Appreciate it.
Take care.
Thank you. All right. Item 3 is policy and procedures for liaison roles, talking specifically to departments. Sir, please join us. I sure appreciate this document that has some options and suggestions.
Tried to capture as many options. Many of these are, you know, exclusive of each other, so the one way or the other, it's not even remotely a final kind of draft
document
in that sense. It's just kind of cross off what you don't like and keep what you do, or add something new, or delete and move it around.
Sure. You have somewhere to start with this.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Did you get one of these in writing? You need one?
I have one, thank you. Okay. I just got it.
I got two of them, so I didn't know.
You can't look at them both at once.
I could.
You could try.
I think we're doubling up here.
All right, Commissioner liaisons to departments. Looks like 3.0A. Got a few things to go through there with guiding principles.
Are these departments or committees?
Departments.
Departments only, okay.
Yep. Thank you.
I think at some point it's both. I see advisory boards, I see department heads.
Eventually, I think it talks about,
Even D, it says advisory boards.
And can we put advisory boards on here instead of authority to commissioner liaisons to departments? Departments and advisory and committees are different, I think.
Yeah.
Are they?
Yeah.
We're assigned liaison roles, and that kind of comes with it. Committees, there's a couple exceptions.
Okay. It's just that we're talking about standing authority and stuff like that to department heads, whereas to committees, it wouldn't be that way.
No, but I wonder if committee should be a subtitle. Our role as liaison is to a department. We're not assigned a liaison directly to a committee unless by special something. The other ones just kind of go with our liaison role. Maybe that's something we define. How are liaison roles to advisory boards established?
Yep. I don't know if that's in here, though. Where are you seeing where we're talking about committees? Because all I'm seeing is commissioners.
Did you see under Section 3 that you pointed out D on page 1?
D. Oh, and advisory boards. There's one. Yeah.
It has it a couple other places, but that's...
Yeah. I was looking for a whole section. It's kind of 4G peppered in there, yeah.
Kind of touches on that one. Vetting advisory board applicants, for example.
There it is.
4E as well.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, and I haven't gone through this on my own, so I don't have any preconceived ideas about where I think we should go.
No, I got this morning when I arrived. So.
Right. And I just wasn't that early because the power was out at my house.
Did you have a flashlight? Aren't you prepared?
I did. I had a flashlight.
Okay.
I have my little buddy there, too, and he knows where all the flashlights are.
He knows where everything is, yeah.
He gets excited when the power goes out. So this 3.0, Section 3, just kind of describes liaison defines as a person who establishes and maintains communication, mutual understanding, and cooperation. So this is just kind of definition stuff.
Yeah, and the principles of a liaison. So this is kind of a pick and choose. It doesn't all apply, but Wally and I just did a lot of information gathering and put all different kinds of options on here.
Trying to hit all the bases.
Right. So you guys, you can decide what suits this department best. And then we can go with that and create a policy. But we wanted to put as many options down as possible so that the information is out there that we gathered.
Right. It doesn't seem like there's much there to be thrown out. It looks like just describing the different roles. They don't seem to conflict one another, do they?
Not in the principles. There are some in some of the other sections that do.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I saw it in the other sections. But that one...
That's largely just kind of explanatory. Research about how other counties approach liaisonships, and so a lot of kind of the best parts we try to include in there. But whether it's the best parts, you know, to us versus to board A, I don't know.
Right.
Would you explain C for me?
No, where do we get that?
3C. Mm-hmm. Liaisons accept responsibility for external advocacy experts on specific or with specific jurisdictions. It's a lot of legal speak that I don't really quite understand. What does it mean? You mean an example?
Recollection.
My understanding would be that if you're representing this committee or department, that you would be advocate for them. And be able to have that information and help them through whatever process that they're going through. That's my understanding of that.
Okay.
So Darren's liaison to Cape Junction, and with that accepts responsibility for advocacy and reaching out in specific jurisdictions, something like
advocate.
That?
Okay.
Right, if they need to find out something that I can find out for them, whether it be, is there a grant stream available for that, or is it legal, or those things, I can come back and go, hey, Wally, is this legal? And I can go back, yeah.
Or is this advocacy, like... You know, with state legislator funding
an external advocacy effort.
Yeah.
That sounds to me is with legislation that comes up, or with AOC, or with NACO. I mean, generally speaking, the one difference is that if somebody's going, there's oftentimes we've taken the mantle of a different topic that we're not liaison for. For instance, as liaison to parks, you guys authorized me to speak on the BLM Park Exchange because I was going to D.C. And so that
became... There are some exceptions.
that, you know, advocating for the mining stuff when we went, because I was on. So there's been delegated stuff outside of liaison before for the sake of who's going. And
I didn't know if this meant I go to the airport advisory board meeting and basically take over the meeting.
No.
Tell them when I advocate for whatever I want. And
yeah, you want to clarify that
somewhere? I just don't.
It sounds like good.
It sounds like it's way wide open, okay. And it doesn't define what we're trying to. I see what Commissioner Morgan's saying, Commissioner Fowler's saying, but I don't want us walking into an advisory meeting and then. And I know we have the ability to do so, but I feel uncomfortable doing that. I like to sit there and listen to what they rattle on, and if they say, Commissioner, and ask for advice, I'm trying to give it to them, or I'll have to get back, or that needs to go to legal. You know, just like I saw in the mining advisory, Commissioner Fowler said, you know, that does need to go to see Wally. That needs to go see Wally. That's, I think, what we kind of as a steering. But we don't have only our hand on the tiller.
There are some advisory boards we're voting members, though. There are not exactly advisory boards, but there are some liaison roles that they're a voting member.
They're a voting member.
An example?
Lipsick.
Lipsick?
Sure. Right. Sure.
Any other example? I know, it's pretty
thin. Their board, technically, by statute, the BCC can designate one commissioner as a Fair Board member. In which they would
but we
be.
Haven't done that here because I'm not a member of the Fair Board.
I don't know if there's ever been a history of that. It's statutorily there, whether we've done it or not. The commissioner, it doesn't have to just be a liaison. It is, by state law, can be a Fair Board member.
I'd like you to look that up.
Right, okay. So
you have that paperwork already provided from what Pat gave last week. You each got a copy.
I saw that.
Okay.
Pat provided it last week. The MOU between the county and the Fair Board, this 2015 statutes, and some different stuff. So,
thank you.
Put a copy on the.
Oh, okay.
Annette sent out an email to all of us saying we got it.
Well, so I don't have a problem with much of the stuff in three. Was there a tweak to be made in C?
Sounds like, yeah, Commissioner DeYoung, I think, was on to one there.
I would say that's a different area.
Different area.
To me, external advocacy, separate responsibility for external advocacy efforts on specific or specific jurisdiction, to me, that's not an advisory board issue. That's advocacy.
Okay.
So if there's an advisory board concern, I think it would go somewhere else.
Okay.
Probably under the advisory board roles. Unless you guys want it specific,
we'll keep it on the burner and
keep it on the burner
when the time comes. Okay,
I just need it.
Okay,
clarify.
Well, then a little more black and white and some choices to be made in four. A selection of liaisons, how we decide who is liaison to each department, and that was usually decided in a group at the AOC convention. In the past.
That's been our experience just since we've been on the board. I couldn't tell you what was done beforehand.
Right. This is our first year without
having done that.
Having done it yet, right. Mm-hmm.
For me, and I'll just speak openly, I feel as though that I'm being targeted because I have certain ones and they all wrote letters saying I'd like to keep my liaison and then direct, and I know it's not their. We're supposed to tell them what they want to do. But when you have, I work with veterans, and, you know, do you want to work with veterans? I think we can sit down. And there's not one meeting that I go to as a liaison that you can't say, you know, I want to go to that meeting. I have interest in the Fair Board. Or I have interest in veterans. Or I have interest in such and such. But it sounds like now we're going to annually, randomly assign, commissioners take turns, picking groups, blah, blah, blah. I get the point that you become more versed in all the other departments in the place. However, I get the point from the boards that if they like what they're doing, and we had it when we first came into office, it was, you know, if that department head wants you to be liaison, they should be able to say that, and we'll honor that.
No, it was only elected.
Consider it, at least.
It was only electeds that we asked. Everything else was decided in November before we even came on board. The department heads had nothing to do with who their liaisons
were. I ended up with fairgrounds and airports, and they came in and requested me, and we gave it to me.
Okay, that's not the first year.
That was the first year.
No, the second year, honestly, I asked you to take fairgrounds because of some construction issues, and it wasn't the department head that asked. It was me recommending to her to change it. But it was only the elected officials we've ever asked, who do you want your liaison to be? I asked some elected officials, and they said, one of the responses was, we think every year they should change for the sake of the full board being versed in different county stuff. We all feel more comfortable with different things. I would say this is not a target. This is a... I kind of felt like Darren didn't get a say in what he got last year. You got what was left over. And...
And what the previous commissioner had.
Because
it didn't get... Well, here's the thing. There's things like transportation. Dan's been going to RVAC meetings for 10 years. And there's a lot of institutional knowledge there.
And it doesn't matter on RVAC because guess what? It's the same time as our meeting here, so I never get to go.
And years past, if you look at...
And I'm gonna start going back to RVAC. There wasn't any money to divvy up, so I really didn't think it was that important to go.
But if you look at journals from 20 years ago, they will have the commissioner going to that meeting. They're not at the commissioner meeting. They're off doing county business at a different meeting.
Right.
And so that's
it's a common practice that is individual to the commissioner as well. But
if the meeting time needs to change, certainly the board can do that. We'll accommodate.
Mm-hmm.
We don't want to have it scheduled to be excluded from the meeting on a regular
basis. Not with RVAC being that there's transportation taxes and we need to be advocating at that level.
We're just lucky we have a guy like Rob Brandis that goes to that meeting, and he's very well respected over there. And so I feel as though, I contact him every time. Is there anything coming up that we really need a vote? Because that's important if we need that vote. You know how important that vote is. But however, Rob says, no, we're going to talk about this, and this. I said, yeah, I read all that in the agenda. But I don't see anything there that really, I don't think our way in on the third bridge across Columbia is going to have any difference in one.
No, but our advocacy there would be, what are you doing for Southern Oregon with our taxpayer dollars and our gas money? So that's why we take part. That's where that advocacy comes in, as to why do we want rural Oregon.
But it seems natural that the person that goes to RVAC should also be the liaison to Public Works.
Correct.
I mean, there's some natural chunking
up and
grouping.
I'm liaison to Public Works, and I'm liaison to the RVAC, and that's fine. But, I'm just looking at the way this thing's worded, and I think it's worded right at me. So that's fine. You can do what you want.
I take these as options, these are different things that they collated.
Because
commissioners
take turns picking. You say, "Well, I pick Public Works. I'm out." Because you know why? I've been Public Works for a long time, and you want to pick it because you want to go to Public Works, and I basically have to step down because commissioners take turns picking. I think if commissioners got together at a meeting and said, "Okay, this is what we want to do. Do you want to keep that? Do they want you to keep you?" I think that weighs heavily on it. But to say, "Nope, I think I want Parks." Because you know what? I want to really get into Parks. I can accompany Darren Fowler to a Parks meeting. It just has to be noticed. If I really want to go to a Parks board meeting, there's nothing stopping me from doing that at all.
So there's not a
standard
on how liaisons are picked. The first year, we sat down and went through the list.
Randomly assigned.
No. So again, these were options.
Okay.
And
the one you're espousing is number 5.
Everything on here is an option.
For us to say, is there an option we like that annually we'd like to select liaisons, or are they randomly assigned, or
not? Are they randomly assigned? They will be randomly assigned.
These are ors.
That is an option.
Or and I want to cross out randomly assigned. I don't know what you guys think, but I think that's not a good way to go.
Correct.
I think we need to chunk them up.
And then number 4, you just made a point for number 4 that you've got Public Works and Transportation and said group like departments together, which we've been doing, and rotate year to year. So in other words, I spent a whole year working with Brandis, and then we're going to rotate because now it's your turn to do that.
Correct. Just like the chair rotates every year, there's an opportunity for departments to rotate every year. So the sake of we're elected as board, so the board has the full information, is an option. Not
devil's advocate. I'm with Public Works and Transportation. And Public Works and Transportation says we want to keep Dan DeYoung. And I get outvoted two to one. Nope, we're going to rotate this year, and Darren Fowler's going to be up. So now I get to go explain to them that, you know what, I'm not your liaison anymore. They go, wow, we work well together, so on. But now Darren Fowler is. And Darren Fowler can be as involved in Public Works as Commissioner Fowler wants to be.
I think part of it is trying not to take it personally. That we as a board, well, don't. And here's why. The chair role changes every year, and with the role of chair, there's different responsibilities. There's also times and seasons of different things happening that you, as a board, we divide and conquer the work for the sake of making sure that we're as balanced as we can, that we're sharing the load, that we're carrying things off, and it's not meant as a personal attack on anybody. It's, let's have a standard and understand why we're picking things, and that it's not... And quite frankly, I mean, there's other things that aren't listed on here, I realize. I should tell you, I've had liaisons come to me this year that are not my own and say, I want a different liaison. And my response is, you need to work with your liaison.
If I'm that liaison, then that person needs to come to me and say, would you mind if? And I'm fine. But to go to you and say, I think I need a new liaison.
And that's why I referred them back to their liaison. If people come to me with issues, I say, well, that's liaison so-and-so. But we've never established the roles of liaison. We have an opportunity to put a policy in place. Rob Brandis was in here that time I asked. Okay, it's still not clear what the role of liaison is. The first year I was told it's all this empower. No, the next year it's not that empower. Well, let's define it. Rob said, even the department heads don't understand what the role of liaison is. If we put it in a policy, then not only do the department heads know what's expected and what the role is, but we have something that we see, this is what the role is, well, this has been authorized by the board, we know the avenue and the length. There's nothing in the policy right now or in standards that says a liaison can discipline a department head or correct behavior. There's nothing that says that.
I've never done that.
Well, there has been lots of times where I was talking to previous commissioners. What do you deal with when a liaison department head comes to you and says, I have an issue with this other department? That's somebody else's liaison role. Do we take it to a public meeting and deal with it that way? Or do you refer them to the other liaison? Or does the one they come to deal with both departments? That's a situation we've never defined. How do we deal with that? And it's not authorized. It's not defined. So this is not meant to be an attack. This is meant to be a, let's put it on paper so there's no question of what we're
expecting. Let's decide what the method is and then put it on paper. And if it's exactly what we're doing, then we'll keep doing that. For me, in thinking while we're going through this, is I'm thinking not annually at number one, but biannually. Every time there's a new commissioner or an election, let's say, that there's a chance there where you want to talk about it, because annually I think changing is too often. I crossed out commissioners taking turns picking. I crossed out randomly assigned. I like group like departments together, and I crossed out rotate year to year.
And I think that I think you want to go every other year, but I think there should be a sentence in there that says that if you're a department head and you have a liaison that you don't want, that you should be able to at any time bring that up.
How do department heads request new liaisons?
Yeah, exactly. If a department head says, you know what, this isn't working out for me.
Yes.
I want a new liaison. How does that department head or the chairman go about that? And I realize that we can. We don't always do things as we, but we are the governing body, and don't ever forget that. But that doesn't mean that it's our role to fundamentally impose something on that without hearing them out.
Dictate from the top.
The first year we came in, there were two newly elected commissioners. Therefore, most everything was up for grabs. And we went through and had a discussion of what are you interested in? What are you interested in? And we divvied it up. We came in the first week in January 2017, and we affirmed, is this what we want to do? Yes.
Was there a vote or a resolution or a yes, this is our list?
It was a yes, this is our list that we had done at AOC in November before we were even sworn into office.
Right.
It wasn't, and essentially we get here and say this is what the liaison list is, and department heads were told this is who your liaison is, and we've all started establishing working relationships. There's been different times. I was given some assignments for a while because someone else couldn't attend them. There was another meeting that the advisory board reached out and said, our person never comes. Will you be our backup? We've all had those situations. And so there's been switching along the way because, again, it's just as the board assigns.
Yeah.
And it's sticking with the charter.
Did you make official decisions at a meeting? Was there a vote?
It was an informal. There wasn't an order, though.
Right.
We could do that. We
or
saw the Klamath
or whatever it was.
But at the AOC, we had the list, and we sat there and wrote down names. Yeah. We came back; they were typed up, and they came to a meeting afterwards.
And then, if you changed your mind in June for whatever circumstantial reasons,
we sent out a memo, and this has changed.
This has changed. Okay.
Yep.
So that's what I mean. I think we need to have some language in there. That the department head or whoever, you know, whether it be a chairman of the advisory committee, says, you know what, Commissioner DeYoung never shows up to the meeting, or Commissioner DeYoung is disruptive at the meeting, we want to change liaison. There should be an avenue for that to happen.
Sure.
I don't know if we're going to get, we'll probably get on it later, so I won't get on to, I think that the board, the full board, and we've touched on this a couple of times, that there are certain departments that the full board needs to have. I'll use legal, for instance. When we came in, Commissioner Hare was legal. He was the liaison to legal. And I thought, that's odd, because really legal is that all of our...
Right.
You need to be able to have access
finances
to legal and everything else.
Right.
And legal doesn't sit down and have a quarterly meeting or a monthly meeting. That's when you bring stuff to us. So I think that's a full board. I think assessor is full board. I think clerk is full board. I think the tax department, full board. Those are all elected officials. And go from there. I think it's very important to that. I don't know whether the sheriff would be lumped into that or what. I don't know. But I think there are some really important things that full board should be.
Yeah.
Well, and when I was chair and
legal
had a position thing they needed signed off, they brought it to me.
Yeah.
None of those, so it may be the full board is for the department for certain things, but there's some things they need a liaison they can go to and talk with. And I think we should
would
look
that be
at
chair?
Well, that's what we need to define. Should that be chair as that
right.
You're the
as the lead of the three? Just for convenience, when there is a liaison.
This is my concern. I go to Commissioner Fowler because he's the chair, and Commissioner Fowler says, I'd like the whole board to hear that concern.
Yep.
Yep.
Unless it was just to sign something for signing authority, and he could do it.
Signing authority,
sure.
I'm going to.
Yeah.
Right.
But if we say that the full board is the liaison, who's the signing authority? Define
right.
The signing
liaison with chair.
That's 4F, by the way.
I know.
So
I saw that coming.
Well, that's what I mean. I was jumping ahead.
Yeah.
I shouldn't
Let's
do
it.
That. But.
Well,
oh, there it is. Yeah. Well, because I added number 6 on 4A, elected officials.
I did too.
Yep. Because that needs to be considered.
Yeah.
Also, under 1, where I changed it to biannually, I asked a where. Is that AOC, or is that something we do in January, or is it both? Do we talk at AOC and then we ratify in January so that everybody has a public meeting show, you know, where you say, this is the list. Yeah, January, good. We'll pass it in our first meeting or whatever, whenever we select chair and do that.
Well, we have to talk about it at our first meeting.
Right.
We make a decision at AOC between the elected, you know, not really a commissioner yet, and,
mm-hmm.
and what if you get reelected?
The commissioner elect.
If you're not a commissioner elect because you're still a commissioner, so it's not just
right.
Commissioner elect. If you have a change in power shift, that's one thing. But you know we need you know I don't mind the AOC thing because it's very informal and you can really just sit there over a cup of tea and make those decisions and get that all ironed out as to what you like and what you dislike and so on and so forth.
But
it has to come back, I think, in a public meeting. It better come back in a public meeting. These are
what we
and announce it.
That'll have a discussion about,
so to speak,
and then it can be ratified at WBS or something.
I don't know that AOC is the right meeting. I mean, if they're elect and it's kind of like, what's your preference? And you kind of are saying your preference coming up. But the next year, all three are in office. We're going to AOC for AOC business. Okay. If we're doing county business at AOC, that needs to be noticed as a public meeting. It needs to be...
That's a good point.
I think that's protected, though, isn't it? Mm-hmm. Yeah. So
if we're doing AOC business, is it protected for county business?
Oh, I can do a full analysis on that if you'd like. But
I just want to make sure that the boundaries of...
Right, and that's usually shown by the whichever experienced commissioner has already been in office should really take the lead on how far that conversation goes. Because you're not going to decide somebody's driveway decision while you're at AOC. I stay away from that. But if you're doing this, this is more structural.
It's more discussion.
Not like you're setting a policy. No, you're setting roles, and so I think it's okay to discuss at AOC. I just think the ratifying moment in January still has to happen, that discussion.
Yeah. And it can be ratified at the same time that your election of officers is ratified, that you do election of officers. That's just part of that.
So I've crossed out, randomly assigned, I've crossed out number two, and then I've left one, although I've changed it to biannually. And four, group like departments together and crossed out, rotate year to year. And keep the same until a request for change, I think, should be in there.
And you added a six?
Yeah, because then you could do it during the year in under that role.
Okay.
Or what if you put changes needed or something like that? The problem I have with number
changes
five
allowed at any time.
Is who asked the request?
Yeah.
Is it another commissioner that's asking the request? Is it the commissioner assigned that's asking for a different request?
Clarify that. Yeah, let's
change.
That's
my concern with number five. Mm-hmm. Who makes the request for change?
And how?
So,
far it's been informally where, I don't even remember who had it before me, but all of a sudden I'm doing the stuff in Medford for the workforce stuff. And
we all
you had it.
Wait a minute. You had it and gave it to me, and I gave it to Derek.
That's
one of those.
That's the hot potato.
Reverse that. You had it. I took it. I gave it to Derek.
I think you might be right.
Right.
But we've all had those of, I don't want to do this one, or something's going on. We need a change. We need to be able to have the flexibility.
So requests for change can be dealt with at any time.
At some point in time, and this... Maybe so. I'm just going to throw this out there. At some point in time, we collectively, as the board, need to find out what we really think of. And I'll just use it: Rogue Workforce Partnership. I was frustrated with it because I didn't see their purpose. They got a big budget, and I didn't really see. I go to the meetings and I hear a lot of. I mean, if you want to go in an example of rhetoric. That's it. And buzzwords. That was it. And purposely, they put Rick Dyer and me as chair, co-chair. It swaps back and forth every year so that both commissioners from Jackson and Josephine have to be there because we're chair.
Yeah. Well, and that board's really small.
It is.
It doesn't take much to ruin a quorum. With that executive board.
Yeah, so I wonder if that was by design to basically lock the county governments into that program and not be able to say what they really think about the program or some of
that. Do you know why? They were ORS 190 organizations. In the whole formulation, it was...
They're like council of governments. 190?
ORS
190. Policy 190?
ORS 190 is a law that basically says different governing bodies can create a separate entity that then becomes kind of its own body.
Mm-hmm.
And the Job Council was an ORS 190, 911 board, solid waste agency, some of these other ones. And so they kind of have their own entities, but we've stayed as a partner. We had a like reason for starting them, and so we have a voice on them. So in their bylaws and different stuff they created, yes, the two governing agencies had to be the leadership role. But bring up Workforce Oregon. That alone comes with how many meetings? It's Rogue Workforce. It's the business something. You end up with Regional Solutions. There's all these different things.
So Ready is connected to that.
So Ready, yeah. I mean, there's so many. They can be taken off one each kind of thing. But a lot of them gets, and Rogue Workforce, there's a meeting of the board, there's a meeting of the executive, there's a meeting of the big group. I mean, they have so many different meetings.
Then we got to get together for a retreat.
Yeah,
it.
There's that too.
And they're all 3-hour meetings.
It kind of feeds on itself.
Those chunk up as an economic development.
I just don't know if it's their value, because go to So Ready, really active group of people, and then you go to Rogue Workforce and you hear the same ideas only about a month and a half behind. I don't know how many times, this the apprentice program or what you had in the
Youth
Pathways. We've been talking about that for a long time, but it's happening there, and here's Rogue Workforce says, we're going to go to all the schools. Well, So Ready's already been to all the schools and generated that excitement. And then Rogue Workforce, we did this. No, you didn't do it. It was already done by somebody else. And I just wonder about the value. Where do we as a board sit down and the three of us decide what the value of some of these organizations is? And I don't know if we even have that in our authority to do that. You'd almost have to get together with the Rogue Workforce side of it.
That would be a great call for legal to take on for us.
I think so. I think we need to refer that. As if you didn't have anything else to do.
It does raise a greater point.
Wally, it's a new year. Oh,
exactly. We've got nothing else going on.
But
it does raise another point of whether to assign a liaisonship to any given entity.
We're stuck on that one. On Rogue Workforce, we're stuck because...
Well, it's in their bylaws, right?
It's in their bylaws, not ours.
There's going to be chair.
Yeah, there's that scenario, but who decides in other cases? RVCOG, I mean, I guess you need somebody there, but you have to have a liaison? I mean...
No. It could just be that it could rotate. Mm-hmm. It could be,
a representative of
the board shows up to the meeting.
And that may be all of them.
CDC, that was the one I was backup on. Mm-hmm. We had a previous commissioner that showed up twice in 2 years. It's like, okay, so then we have an opportunity for someone else to go. But then it's a matter of what do we do for these outside ones that are not. So you almost need to define it between what are our advisory boards, what are the outside roles, what are the, partners.
The department heads.
Yeah. Chamber's
so
a partner. We take part in chamber. When I first started,
there's four because you got the.
They had board meetings, board. Which they don't actually want us going to the board meetings. Oh. They do want us going to the business retention meeting. They do want us going to government affairs. Mm-hmm. But again, there's a lot of liaison roles and.
Yeah, does every entity deserve a liaison, and who decides that? I guess is where the policy would really want to go. Just to put it on paper.
Yeah, we've never defined it. I mean, what do you do if you're sick and you can't make it to an advisory committee?
Right. Do you have a default? Do you just ask Annette to ask the other two commissioners, hey, you want to go to a meeting I can't make?
But we've had meetings that none of us have gone to because we all have multiple things going on.
Right. RVCOG is one of them. It conflicts with the chamber meeting in Illinois Valley, and so I choose that one.
Yeah. It's your home turf, but I usually evaluate going to RVCOG. They have some pretty good information there.
Okay.
From all the, because it was pretty well representative. I wasn't there ever, I think, that there was empty chairs in the house. Every once in a while, Eagle Point.
Well, they serve lunch over there.
Eagle Point doesn't serve. Well, you can have my cookie.
That's hilarious. And there was something in the kind of the policy A4, that the department heads are who bring the information back to the board. Do the board liaisons even have to go to advisory committees? And that is a question that it's not defined. Do you have to go? And
is it always a good idea? I mean, talk about the Rural Planning Development Commission, right?
The Planning
Actually
Commission.
Actually, a better idea not to go, not so to you go. Don't have quasi-judicial.
Right. In case stuff comes through.
There was the
but
mining meeting when they had
you could talk to the chair, I guess, and get a summary, but are you still... learning information outside of the stream.
It's such a judgment call.
Right. So I stopped going.
Yeah.
And because I figured some of it might pass through.
So that's not even the only example. Look at, Fair Board, for example, when the decision was being processed by that entity about the consultant firm.
Right.
And then they had their process and they wanted to kind of deliver something to the board. And that's how it played out. But, how would we navigate that in terms of the liaison going to the meeting?
Right, and getting inside information on the subject.
Well, and it's still an issue of these liaison roles that you have one commissioner with information that the others do not. And so how that process of, as we've defined different roles, we can't all just say, hey, Annette, will you advise the others? Hey, Annette, will you advise the others?
Right.
And so as a board, what is our authority as a board, decision makers versus liaisons or advisory in nature, or what is that role?
Right. Well, and there's going to be some commissioner style that interrupts it as well. Because some of them will, yes, I'm going to every liaison meeting I have, and others will be like, no, I'm not. I'm just going to watch the minutes, and I'll show up at the weekly business session.
I think that needs to fall under number 6 in today's agenda on liaison reports. I think we can clear up a lot about inter liaison reports later on in the agenda.
Right.
So we're back to this thing, and I think we're...
Well, and I think having liaison reports on the agenda is going to help with that information stream.
I do, too.
In the future.
Make you do your homework.
Yep. It'll
a test on
prompt
Friday.
You to tell us what's going on in your committee. And we may not get through all of this today, and that's okay. This is just the start of a process. I kind of like where we ended up there at 4. We've scratched out some things and enhanced a couple. Let's look at B, the contract signing authority. There's 4 options there.
Go ahead. But I have a question when you're ready.
Yeah, I'm just saying there's... The contract signing authority, do we leave it like it is up to a certain amount, which is like number 2. Is there no role? Do we want to go to that length and have no contract signing authority? Or do you want it to come to the entire board for all matters? Or if the contract's already been accounted for in the budget, can you just sign off on it? And so there's some pretty clear differences in each of those suggestions. Do you like where the contract signing authority is at now? Because, personally, I'm a little uncomfortable with it being as high as it is. Stuff going on without the other 2 commissioners knowing it. Now, with our new method, maybe I'll come and say, hey, I signed for this last week, just so you guys know.
Number 2, could you put up to a certain amount with presentation to the board?
Right, reporting to the board.
Yep.
That's a possibility for
presentation to the board.
But should the board have a way to write in? I'll give an example. I didn't know we were going to continue with a fair director assignment for another year. We talked about it, then we hired a fair manager, and then there was a contract signed under contract liaison, and I didn't realize it till later, and it was like, oh.
And that's why you say with presentation to the full board.
But is it after it's signed, so it can't be changed, or you get feedback from the board of do you go ahead with that, or is it before?
Right.
We had another department spend over $10,000 at a department head level, but they broke it down into
chunks that would be under.
So each of the chunks were under $10,000, but if you look at the project, it was over. Was that the intent? No.
That was creative. That's called creative finance.
Yeah. creative presentation.
But it's one of those things that with the contract signing, we had been proposed to give even up to $100,000 to the department head. If it was in the budget with the personnel or the project, but as our current process, they say, okay, meet with your liaison before budget and get your approval of your liaison, and then it goes to the full budget committee. But there's no time that we're asking in those contracts or the personnel, okay, where's the funding coming for that additional person, unless it comes mid-session. We have that vetting process mid-session. Where's your funding source? What happens if you don't get the funding source? If it goes away, does the position go away? Was that contract signed? You know, so there's that process. So it got me asking, do we change how we vet things? If it's going to, do we do kind of a pre-thing that instead of going to the liaison, that department heads come before the full board for like a week? Some other counties do an all-day thing with budget beforehand. And they say, okay, this is our proposal. We want these new positions. We want these new projects. Here's a multi-year grant that's going to blah, 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 or this, and we vet it ahead of time, give the blessing for it to go to budget, and then budget committee passes it, and then we don't have to revisit it down the way. Or do we say that no matter what, if it's budgeted, we do see it? There's some conversations that should be happened before the process changes. And I think that, because the proposal was $100,000 if it's in budget. Okay, but do we know that when a department head goes to Darren, that Darren, you looked at positions, you looked at this, you looked at this, you looked at all this kind of stuff, the right. same as if they came to me, that I'd be looking at the same things, and Dan, that we're all, you know, apples to apples, checking for the same process, and then we say, go ahead to budget, or is there a vetting of the board, because liaisons don't have an authority to approve something, this is not contract levels, these are, you know, or something like that, what right. do we want to do with that? Where's the vetting happen that would happen mid-season? If it's just put in the budget document,
I wouldn't want vetting to be misconstrued by the budget committee that all three of you agreed on it ahead of time. So by the time it gets to the budget committee, which is three, we're already halfway there.
Budget committee is six. Three plus
right,
three.
But six, but we're yeah. three of that.
But that budget committee makes a recommendation, or they approve a budget, then goes to the board, and the board can
back
change
down to
it.
Three.
And yeah. approve it, but it's us to adopt it. There was a year where a budget committee member didn't like reproductive health funding and made a motion in the budget committee to take away funding of a certain amount for reproductive health in the health department. That got passed through budget committee. It then comes to the board, and the board put the money back to fund the program. So ultimately, it goes through budget committee, but the board is who does the final ratification of the budget.
Right.
And that's just an example how something went different with the budget committee versus what the board adopted, approved budget versus adopted budget. But it's not here, us asking to ratify the contract signing rules, because the option that was presented us isn't here either, kind of.
Yeah.
And if it were just changing the amounts is one thing, but if it's in the budget, when does that get vetted by the full board? Because our current budget structure is higher level. It's not vetting. And so the other question is, do we, in the budget process, ask that every department that has a change in personnel, has a change in projects, has to present fully to the full budget committee? Or do you make them present to the full board ahead of time, and it's part of the recommendation to go to the full budget committee? Those are some details that I talked to Arthur about the policy recommendation change, and he wanted to, I think it's something that he would have a conversation with all of us about, what do you think, and vetting out the what should this role be.
I think we've got an awful lot of resource out there with our department heads. You mentioned Arthur's name for one thing, JJ's another one. Of people that we really need to sit down and have this conversation with. We're up back to B and contract signing authority. I'm not. I think we need to think about that whole title section.
Okay.
I think that needs to. We need mm-hmm. to put some real thought into that. How it works. Has it worked? Has it not worked? What are you uncomfortable with as far as your signing authority? Because they bring it. Well, yeah, it's $150,000. It's $49,999.99. So that's why I brought it to you. You sure it isn't $53,000, and now you're just making it work. So I think this whole item B, we really need to kind of give some thought yep. to and reassess.
And we need to define.
And come up with some.
Well, and this doesn't even have levels. That IGAs come before the full board, no matter the amount. And so we recently had an IGA with, what, $10,000?
Yes.
It could have been signed by a department head, but it's an IGA. So the IGA comes. So this section.
We can address that kind of thing in the separate policy.
Okay.
I mean, that was,
yeah, I think
that's
the IGA mentioned.
It's
document.
All hinging upon, yeah. and it doesn't need to be.
Right,
that
doesn't need to be
that's
that.
A, that's a discussion,
known.
But
yeah.
until this is sorted out, we can't even go
no,
there.
You don't even know where to go.
Right, so I think there needs to be money levels to describe it, unless we go all the way down to no.
And C.
And then everything comes before the board, and then we authorize the next process.
Well, I think we right. need to think about B and C.
That's the no rule.
C falls right along into that.
Correct.
Yeah.
Yes.
So we have
B and C. Let's table till we can
okay.
think about them.
But they're kind of related.
Yeah, they are.
Yeah, it's budget and contracts level.
Yes.
So
yes.
Yeah, because if contract has been accounted for in the approved budget, I just want to add that word approved.
Okay.
So
good.
That we're not talking about the
no, not presented. Approved, adopted.
Adopted, yes, there you go.
So approved
another
is budget committee,
word.
Adopted is yeah. the board's final adopted
is,
budget.
That's a better word.
So if you look, kind of, let's get started on some changes of that, and we'll have a re-conversation about B and C. That makes sense?
Well, I think that when we have that conversation, we probably should have Arthur here.
I do, too.
For
I
the finance and the
some,
budget side.
We have a lot of really good resources that he's in, because he's the guy that presents the budget. So let's
one
get
last
the
time.
one more
only
time.
One more
time. And that's fine. But, you know, we want to establish up before the new finance director comes in.
Exactly.
So the new finance director has some kind of roadmap as to how to get to Illinois Valley from here.
And that's what we're trying to do.
And that's what I think we're trying to do. Let's leave B and C. We'll get rid of
that. Put some fences around it.
D.
All right. Department head evaluations, discipline, and requests for time off. Is this not elected officials, I assume?
Right.
So maybe that should be in there. Does not apply to elected officials. Because they don't get evaluations? Am I correct in that?
The ballot measure that went out in the 90s expressly carved out elected officials.
Right. Okay. So this is just talking about unelected department heads. What's the method right now? I've never had anybody request time off from me.
None of us have.
Yep.
There is a method.
What's it now?
They put the request in the time card, time clock, mm-hmm. and then I approve it, and then I send an email to you all.
I've seen that announcement.
I've seen it every time.
Yeah.
One of the things is full board delegates, A's, and approved department head self-evaluation. I get evaluations from Nate. I get a self-evaluation from Lisa, Rob Brandis, I believe, and they turn those in. Mm-hmm. To me. Now, do I share them with you? No, I do not.
Right.
And I think that's the hole in the operation.
That's something you want to change?
I think that's going to be a policy on its own.
And we can do all of that with number three, board office creates a standard evaluation form, board completes form, in the presence of the manager at executive session. And that maybe answers a lot. I don't want it to be 12 and a half pages on how many times you missed lunch and what your calorie count is.
It needs to be one or two pages.
I think JJ had a very standard form front and back that hit the high points. It basically is just a roadmap to say, we're going to go on vacation, but where do you want to go, honey? And honey says, I want to go to Disneyland. I want to go to Universal Studios. Well, I want to go see the Grand Canyon. And you map that out. What needs to be on that form? And I think JJ had a pretty... form, you know, first off, self-evaluations are very uncomfortable.
Yeah.
When I was in business for myself, and doesn't have anything to do it because I know business doesn't matter to government, but I used to take my employees to lunch once a year. This was their opportunity. I'd buy lunch. Wasn't trying to win any favors with them, go wherever they want to go, and we sat down. Is this your opportunity to tell me what you don't like about me? And certainly my opportunity to tell what I think your shortcomings are. We discussed whether or not you should get a raise, or whether or not you should get an increase in benefits. I can go on from one week pay vacation to two. There were some steps, some ladders that, you know, you've been here 2 years, you're shown to be a dedicated employee, you get a week's pay vacation, or you get health care, or you don't get. And you know, as an opportunity, I says, you don't like what we've discussed today, I pay the check, nice talking to you, clean your van up. No hard feelings. And that was very, very well received because they knew the rules of the road going into that lunch, very similar to a standard evaluation form. They would need to know what questions we're going to ask them at this evaluation session if we do that gets as far as to say go to an executive session with the manager.
So you're advocating for number three?
The
board?
I don't know about the presence of the manager at executive session yet, but I can be convinced.
I do. I think we...
It has to be that way because... You're talking...
Unless they ask for it to be in public.
You're talking evaluation.
I think we actually don't... I would recommend that we come up with a form.
Mm-hmm.
They can come up with their self-eval. We can come up with our evals if we want. We come to that executive session. We agree on an evaluation. They have a right to do it in public, but it can be, you know, executive session. Correct.
Yep.
But it's the full board, and we'll agree in the process and the outcome. But I don't like number one or two.
No, me neither.
And I mean, it's one of those things that,
I don't like four, because I think it should be
Well, we don't ever evaluate without the person there, but we could have the evaluation done and then bring the person saying this is the evaluation that's presented.
Well, this is...
But working with the manager in the evaluation, there's a justification. What are you most proud of this year? Let's make sure it's documented. What goals did you achieve? Let's make sure it's documented. What didn't go well, or what are some areas to work on or improve? Let's make sure it's
documented.
You can
do that on the remark portion of item number three if we have that. If we have mm-hmm. that. They can put their own to have a place, a couple pages if they want of things that they, you know, comment section. Number four, liaison drafts the evaluation, presents the full board. I think if we had come to agreement on this standard evaluation form with the department heads, if they're comfortable with it, we're comfortable with it, it asks the questions we want answered as a full board, I don't have any problem with that, and they could just scratch out number four. Liaison has authority to make disciplinary entries into personal records.
I was going to scratch number five, too, because I think six, any board member can place any disciplinary manner mm-hmm. In personal records or on the agenda.
Correct.
Right? I kind of like six.
But with that would have to go to executive session again.
Right.
Well, there's a whole process of disciplinary that
correct.
We need to hone up yes. as well. Yep.
I just combine them to say disciplinary entries
but,
or a matter on the agenda.
So we're crossing out one, we're crossing out two, we're crossing out four.
Four and five.
Correct.
And kind of morphing personnel records okay. into six.
Well, I've fallen off the train. I'm sorry. So it sounded like Darren was combining five and six. So we're not crossing off five.
Right. Just kind of combining. Because the liaison doesn't have the authority.
Right.
Just disciplinary entries into personnel records should be
yeah. and on
six.
Agenda.
Right. Yeah, I guess I'm still not right. on the train. So who has the authority to make disciplinary entries into
any board member.
Any board member.
Just number
Hold
six.
Hold on. Hold on.
Right.
So let's define the difference.
Right.
Thank you.
So, personnel records, you can have something put in a personnel record, and then at the end of the year at evaluation, you bring that personnel record for, and you bring forth that items to determine if it goes in the evaluation, it's addressed kind of thing. There's different time frames for keeping things. Now, disciplinary matter on an agenda for we to address a disciplinary matter, we can limit it that nothing goes into the personnel file until after it's been addressed by the full board. Or you can say, I want this place in the person's file. That's what you're kind of defining right now.
Right.
So.
And I think it should be a full board decision. I think if the liaison has a problem with the department head disciplinary-wise, that it should go to the full board for what do we do about it.
Well, we want to make sure.
Do we put it in the file?
Sure, it's
do
not
we
just
not?
A personal thing.
Right, exactly.
It brings the full board in and say, you know what, this is going into his record. He goes and applies in Curry County because Dan DeYoung no. didn't like what he did on during plowing the airport, and I'm going to write him up for that. I
right.
went through the end.
It's
going
a check back and balance.
Go yeah. back to the military. I had a Lieutenant JG that had a real swift pen with writing people up. That stays in your service jacket mm-hmm. forever. When it comes to making. Chief or whatever you got, you see some uniforms have gold hash marks or a gold crow, gold this. In other words, just have red ones. You know what that gold means? You've got an impeccable service jacket. That means when somebody said, "I want you to go down in the bilges and I want you to drown in that bilge water," and you go, "I'm not going to do that." Oh, I have subordination. I gave you a direct order, and Uniform Corps of Military Justice, so seven direct orders or whatever they are. You are insubordinate, and that guy's got a bone to pick with you, he puts it in your record. That's not fair. I think that's where the full board comes in and says, you know what, this is going to affect somebody's life from here forward. It needs to have a little bit more than one person involved with it. That's where I'm going. Does that make sense?
Yeah, and so like in five, I would clarify it by saying the full board has authority to make disciplinary entries into personnel records instead of a liaison. So that there is a check and balance on that. If there is some personal
so
thing that's
over. Full board for
yeah.
or
so
or
five's back.
I wouldn't say full board. I would say the board has the
board.
Authority.
Yeah,
okay.
Then it could be two.
Because if
yeah.
you say full board, that may be a 2-1,
yeah. right?
Yeah, yeah.
Or 3-0.
Right.
So
you're
if
right.
you just say board has authority to make disciplinary entries
yep.
instead of liaison, and then any board member can put it on the agenda.
Yep.
Well, I think that's protection for. The department head to know, hey, this is going to be fair. This isn't going to be impartial. Because, you know, we've all known people in authority
that abuse
that got it. Here that just, you know, wait a minute, I didn't do that. That isn't how it went down. And now it's on my record. I don't get gold hash marks. I get red ones. That's not
right.
Fair. And so, going forward, you don't get that promotion. You don't go from captain to admiral if you have a nick in your service record. You don't do it.
And that's not the case in our county.
No, I hope not.
The
evaluations
are documentation of the year, but you can move forward. It's a matter of fact, you should be kind of given the goals of the next year in that process, too. You know, so it's an opportunity of, all right, this is how the last year went. This is what we're expecting next year. It gives guidelines for the sake of expectation, and it's, you know, you got your full board supportive. This is what they expect of me in the next year.
And
so
should we dial into something in there, of course, maybe as an A underneath here or whatever, that you get a review in 2 years if you stay on board, and you get a review in 2 years, and that can be expunged.
For our charter, we do them annually. And all employees do them annually.
He means of disciplinary entries, though.
Yeah, if there's an entry like that.
Let's look at what other policies we have, what's consistent with other employee stuff, other counties. Let's see what the standards are for that before we pick a time frame.
So we agree to keep that employee on as a department head, and they continue on with the questionable offense, then they're not going to correct that. But I think we ought to have a review and just say, you know what, you've done a fantastic job, you made that correction, you understand what the correction was all about, we're going to go ahead and pull that.
And there is really utility there. I mean, let's say you have an employee who not everyone agrees on is doing it the way they want to do it, but they managed to skip along.
Right.
And perhaps they want to hop to a different organization, but that bad entry in their record is holding them back. So maybe there should be an option there.
I think it should be, well, just like we were talking this morning with juvenile. You know, there's an expungement element.
That's common in process to have a time frame that something's right. If it's a this level of an incident, it stays this long. If it's this level of an incident, it doesn't go away.
And
they have those kind of policies.
And they say, you know, I mean, you know, from the employee side, just say, you know, I've been given a second chance. Please let me prove to you that I can do this. Mm-hmm. And if they say, well, I stand in your record forever, they go, you know what, I'm out of here. Or, you know what, you've ruined my career, thanks a lot, so on and so forth.
So one thing I'd like to teach in that process of when somebody violated the law and they were on parole, they violated their supervision, and you took them to jail, you sent me to jail. Well, actually, no, your actions took you to jail.
Right.
So in a disciplinary process where they've been found in a process to have a disciplinary action, we didn't keep them from anything. Their behavior impacted their career.
Correct. Triggered it.
Yeah.
But you've got to also dangle that carrot that they can get that
off.
Cleaned up.
Yeah.
They can get that cleaned up.
Well, and so this evaluation form, I thought that we gave instruction to HR to present an option for that, and we just haven't seen it yet. Is that what I'm remembering correctly?
And I have, I got some things from other counties as well, and I saw some neat things from some of the counties I was going to try to co-locate.
Yeah, we need to have that discussion about the form.
See what the form.
Some of them give you the expectation ahead of time, so you know and how
that's what it should be.
Yeah, so that's there's some really good examples out there that we can make our own to accommodate what we'd
like. So let's push that process a little, please.
Okay. Yeah.
So we have that form coming, because we should be doing evaluations in this first quarter, as per our charter, and I'd like to get back on that. Yep.
I think item 7 has been taken care of.
Yeah, is that just a scratch-off?
I have a question on that.
Sure.
We should define it.
So this is, when Raleigh and I were talking about it, we didn't know if maybe the liaisons wanted prior approval, and then I just do it on the time clock if you want to be aware of it beforehand, or if it matters to you and it's just a mechanical thing where I'm approving it on online. So that's what I want to clarify.
Well, and these are salaried individuals, so there's no
change of budget.
There's no vacation minimum and maximum, or what's the policy?
So essentially, if a manager works in the day, they get paid for the day. If they don't work in the day, they use a paid time off. You know, for the most part, you look at the majority of it, or you know, because technically if you work for 5 minutes, you can get paid for the day and then not work the rest of the day. So there's been guidelines along the way of the majority of your day, or if the majority of your day is off, or if it's a half and you have a second half, you use one a PTO, one a day off. You know, you kind of still aiming for the 40 hours-ish in the week.
Are they filling out time clocks?
They some do, some don't, yeah.
I make sure everybody's time is in by Tuesday morning.
Okay.
But what it leaves out right now is if we had a department head who never put in time off but wasn't there, how do we catch that? How do we know?
Right.
I don't want us to be micromanaging time. I trust that...
Yeah, we just have a policy.
Yeah. I mean, Sarah works all weekend. Does she get a turnaround and maybe take a day off to... She probably won't, you know. But right. We don't have a policy about it. Department heads put policies in place for their managers that are non-union, that are also salaried, kind of as a process.
Don't forget unelected, right? Because we're just talking about unelected department heads, right?
So, okay. So, but as far as department heads... essentially, it would have to be us being on time clock if we wanted to approve. Or what mine do is they email me and say, I'd like to take this time off. Do you have concerns?
Right. No.
Then they go through time clock. But we don't have a policy or a process established for the department heads from us.
Okay. Then we don't have a policy. Sir?
We don't have a policy, but I caution, first off, when you question whether somebody's here or there or whatever it is, you're questioning their dedication to the organization. I don't ever want to do that. I don't think we have any abuses. And if we did have abuses, it would pop up almost immediately to us.
Well, and if someone was abusing their time, then evaluation would be one spot.
Evaluation would be that time, but that is a concern during evaluation.
Yeah.
But to go around and follow somebody and say, well, you know, I was here all day and I didn't see you.
I'm not saying to do that, but
I know that.
But if something happened, for instance, we had an issue with a manager level in one of our departments that kind of had outused sick time, had some other stuff going on, and it was one of those things that we had to, you know, we need to have a system in place so if an abuse happens, we are the accountability to the people. Mm-hmm. So we do want to say, what is that process? So if a department head... say we're never there, how would we know? Does one of their sublings report it to the commissioner that, hey, there's a problem? Right. I haven't seen my department head in 2 weeks and don't know where he is, or they didn't show up and there's no word or no communication.
What is our expectation to do 40 hours a week, barring a holiday? Or, you know, is there any policy in place with expectations for that?
Yeah.
I don't know.
Well, and that's for us to...
Yeah.
You know, establish.
And if we're going to establish such a thing, I don't want Rob Brandis, who worked I don't know how many hours Thursday and Friday, and I call and Dave Rubick's been out since 3 in the morning, and say, well, you know, but you didn't show up on Tuesday till noon, because I've got it written down. He just said, then I'm not going anywhere at 3 o'clock in the morning. I'm going to only do exactly. The one thing about being on salary and in a salary position, I'll go back to a personal experience when I worked for a company here in town. And I was an on hourly, and my boss came and said, I want a service manager. And I said, what's entailed in it? He says, you go on salary, you get X number of thousands of dollars a month. After 6 months and you find you like it, then I'm going to give you a week's paid vacation at the end of the year. If you're still here and doing a good job, 2 weeks paid. And if we mapped it out. Now, my couple of guys that work for me said, you know, that boss is going to work your butt clear into the ground and you're not going to get paid for it. I says, but when there isn't any work, hourly work to be done, I'm still going to get paid and I'll still be here. And I'll be the last man standing. But as far as being on salary goes, nobody followed me around. Because if they followed me around and said, you went fishing yesterday. I told the boss, I said, hey, I'm going to take a day off and go fishing. Man, you've been working hard, take it. There was no problem with that. But if we go around documenting everybody's 15 minutes here by quarterly hour increments, because when he did do that, when the boss did do that, it put everybody on a time card. He had these little sticky things he had to put on a time card and mark down how much time. Guess what? The whole organization suffered. Had people saying, you know what, I don't need a watchdog. I'm leaving. And they would. They go somewhere else where, you know, I put in way too much time for this organization, and when you put in a policy like that, it looks like you don't appreciate that. So they stop that part of it. I mean, it's human nature. I'm not saying it's good, bad, or indifferent.
Right.
It's just human nature. You get somebody that's going to ride drag on a trail herd, he's going to ride for the brand. Because if he's doing that, he's going to do anything you want. And I think that's where we have that right now. I don't want to jeopardize that with
that trust.
With this standard, this evaluation getting so deep that we're following people around without any justification.
Get your time card to me every Friday.
Whatever we have to
do. I'm not up for that. I'm just wondering what the policy is so the expectation is clear, is all I'm asking
okay.
for.
So generally what they do is they put in a time off request, which goes into time clock, and then I approve it. And then the week that they're off, I usually send an email out to the board letting them know who's off that specific week.
Can you send it out to us when you've made that
yes.
decision that, yeah, it looks like there's nothing going on then, and send that out to us then?
It's worth pondering who makes the decision. I mean, let's say this wouldn't ever happen, but let's just say we have a scenario where, you know, facilities is going to renovate the entire courthouse. And then just as the project kicks off, the director goes to Australia for 3 weeks. Right? It's like, wait a minute. The guy who knows everything about this project is now gone. Who approved his time off? You know, and so there's that coordination.
But maybe that's where it stops on the request.
That happened with another department.
Yeah. It sounds like there's no approval process. They're just asking or telling what they're going to do. And we go, okay.
I'm not asking us to micromanage, which is that 15-minute increment.
Yeah,
I'm not asking that. No. I am asking that there's oversight for
the
sake of...
You want a half-hour increment.
No. But, you know, it's one of those things that you do give trust to managers, but... I'll put it this way. You go through a huge screening process to get in law enforcement. You have psych evals. You have all this process. You have to pass backgrounds and all this other kind of stuff. It's extenuating. They've talked to all your neighbors, all this different kind of stuff. You would think that somebody that goes through that level of scrutiny would live their life in a way that is such that they'd never have any critique. But every month, there are people getting decertified statewide who make poor decisions. Even though they went through that high scrutiny level, people are still human and make process, and they get decertified. So I would say that you do give trust, but we are the accountability. And there has to be a process of if there is something going on that we have a way of saying. I'll give you a case in point. Arthur told me this last week that we had a department head that basically came in over budget into to the budget committee and said, you need to find me money. And basically just had an unbalanced budget and put it on the budget committee and then took off for 3 weeks out of country. And they found money. They eliminated her position. And when she came back, she did not have a job. And they found the money for the department overhead. I'm not saying that's a good example, but that happened in this county.
But that's the chance you take.
That is.
That was a poor decision by that department head to take a vacation time in the middle of budget season. So there is something that we as a board should say, what are the times that are off, you know. We know emergency management isn't going to take fire season.
That's the kind of expectation we have.
I want to just be careful that our perception is that we're going to ride herd over every cow.
Yeah, and we're not going to do that.
And I don't want to do that. I think it can be done at your level, notifying us. And we see something that says, hey, Ryan Johnson's going to New Zealand. Oops, excuse me, Australia, right during AOC time. But
there is
those things happen. But at least we know that they're coming up. And we say, Ryan, do you have everything? I've got it. I've got this roadmap all set out.
Yeah, that's the concern.
And we've got this handled. I've got this guy, and I've passed along to them. And nothing is going to need, you know, there's going to be a surprise during that construction period.
For me, if Annette is getting the information, then when evaluations come around, we can look at that attendance at that time and say, hey, you took 6 weeks off last year. You know, was there some family emergencies or something that happened? That seems like a lot of time.
Or did you have 4 months of comp time because you've overworked in the five years prior to that? And you have four months of comp time, and all of a sudden I'm going to take some of it off. Don't use that against them because I've got one liaison. It's got a stack of comp time, and it takes off
from time to time says, I'm going to use some of my comp time. Hey, you've earned it. That's yours. It's in the bank.
But where is the check? Who's watching?
So let me bring a different scenario. Yeah. I can come in, work for an hour, and go home and get a full day's pay.
You don't even need to do that.
I'm not talking me. If I was a department head,
right.
They can come in, work for 1 hour, and get a full day's pay every day of the week. And
the department may suffer a little.
Yes. So, but they don't have to put any PTO down. So if you wait for the time off request, that's where the abuse
not
can happen.
The only
I'm not
indicator.
Saying our folks would do that. But I'm
and we can guard against every scenario.
But when
not
you
trying to do
but
that.
When you use that as this is a potential, our people are saying, I've never done that and I wouldn't think of doing that. Why are they questioning me? Yeah. It's a morale issue. It's I'm you know they say gosh I guess they just don't care about my PTO.
It's
the military was leave you get a
public.
Month you get a month's leave every year in the military. You know this. You get 30 days off, and some people say I'm just going to collect that, and then when I get out they owe me for 4 months back pay. Well, they did that because some of these lifers had almost years on the books. Well, when they pay them, it's a chief's wages that they. Should have taken time off when they were an E2 or an E3, but they didn't do it because they're bankrolling that. And so the Navy said, yeah, I think the Armed Forces said, you can only cash in 60 days, 2 months. So if you want to save up for 4 months, you're only going to get 2 months at the end of your tour, whatever that is. But they want you to take 30 days. They give you that because guess what? That time off is needed to synchronize the gears in your transmission and come back with a clear head. Because you've been to see Disneyland, you spent time with your family and so on and so forth. That's what it's for. And we've got people here, we got employees that I don't know, you know, it's not, none of my business, but I bet you get it through HR. I'll bet you there's some really dedicated people that put a lot of hours after hours. Like I said, I had no problem getting a hold of Rob Brandis on Thursday morning because you know what? He was up, Rubek was out in the thing. Sarah was awake. We were all up. I was in here at 4 o'clock in the morning, and everybody was answering their phone. That's dedication. I don't want to put a check mark by anything that would question that dedication because you can lose that. Just as fast as you can lose anything else, you can lose it. It can backfire on you, and the next thing you do is you have Dave Rubek.
So here's the point. If you put it in policy and it's written that they know, then they know what's expected. It's not a surprise. It doesn't ding morale when it's in policy and known that is expected.
I want their input on the evaluation form. That's all I'm saying. We need to have buy-in from the department.
We haven't approved an evaluation process, but
no. We're
on the last one, which is time off
request
and approval. And
let's look. I think that's what you're saying.
Is there an issue
with office manager tracks request for time off?
I don't.
So is there an issue with somebody who is at equal level with other department heads being the one to approve? Or
I don't think she's approving. She's just tracking. Do we want someone to approve time off? Because right now nobody's doing it, right?
I've had some departments that asked me before they put it in, but right. I don't know. That's not consistent.
Myself. Annette?
I do approve it as far as their paid time off pay. So it's just a mechanical. I approve it. They get to use their PTO for that.
Okay.
I don't know if it would be helpful. As soon as I got the request, I sent it to the board or to the liaison, and once I received that acceptance from whomever the board member is, then I approve it on the time clock.
Right.
Because as long as they know that that's happening, that's
and
fine.
And we'd only be on guard for the scenario you explained.
Yeah.
We're about ready to move everybody in this building, and facilities wants to leave for 3 weeks. That's the only one of who's catching that. You know,
exactly.
Is that the liaison that should be catching that, or should Annette be catching that, or should we have self-starting department heads that would obviously not schedule their time right over?
I hope we have the latter.
I hope we have.
Can
the latter.
We have liaison?
Let's say another scenario. Then you've got RVAC is about to decide on the third bridge, right? And Fairgrounds is now gone for 3 weeks in Australia. See, the two sides weren't talking to each other, but you sure want to know what Fairgrounds thinks about putting that third bridge across that
property, yeah.
And so, you know, that's a scenario where people got to talk about this stuff.
Third bridge was in
But they planned that trip 6 months ago with somebody else, or there's a thing that's been planned for a year and it happens to come up at the same time.
Then you got to work around it.
So
or
it gets approved, but somebody needs to get that information before the meeting, right?
Yeah.
And so the liaison should still be included.
Scenarios like that. Maybe.
Can we change?
The liaison should know what's coming up.
Can we change, take out approves and denies rather than liaison is made aware of requests for time off? Or liaison will evaluate rather than approve.
Yeah,
approve and denied is awful,
awful
harsh.
Okay.
The liaison will be informed of all requests for time off. That just lets them know that it's going to go to the liaison.
I still disagree. There may be a time that we say, I need you here.
But then you call the guy and say, hey, I really need you here because I can't have that.
But if you just say that we're informed,
I've got all these people in line.
Ultimately, it's the liaison approves or the liaison designee approves, or it's something else. There is an approval process that goes through the time clock right now. So do we require that they get permission from their liaison before they do it, or do we want it just to go through time clock and we be informed after the fact that it's coming? Because you don't see time clock requests generally months in advance for planning purposes. It's as you're coming along for pay periods. It's you putting the time in there for... You can put a request in months in advance that would show up and kind of autofill, but... a lot of them are doing them week to week, and so you don't know from week to week what's going to happen.
Can we have JJ come in and give us a presentation on time? Who's on time clock? Who's this? Who's
it's
that?
Actually finance that oversees time clock because it's a paycheck issue.
Okay, then let's have finance. I would like to know how this works. How many people is this going to affect?
So liaison.
If it's six, I'm not interested. I don't want to lose those six because those six are probably pretty high level with our organization, well thought of. So I want to do some more before they do number seven. Okay, so let's get some more time.
And you were leaning towards approves, Commissioner Morgan, and I'm thinking some.
I just don't want it to be that we're just informed. I think something should define who
tracks request liaison tracks request for time off.
Your request will go to your liaison for their approval. I don't know.
Yeah, you're trying to keep the language out to keep it like I'm your boss and you're going to ask me for everything.
Yeah.
That's what we're trying to keep out.
Right.
And so if we can soften that language a hair, is where you're headed.
I don't mind them thinking of us as their boss.
Well,
I just don't want to think of them as I'm the king. And
don't want to remind them.
You don't want to add a level of bureaucracy. I mean, sometimes people just have to take next week off, but the liaison is out of town this week, right? And so now we're waiting.
We're never going to hit all of them.
Well, if they're going to see their kid graduate from fifth grade or something, I definitely don't want to stop that.
No.
You know, and so we don't have to have that little 2-hour
stand up ceremony where they're waiting for the,
But we need to word it in some way.
So they know it's being
tracked. I think it's semantics. You can word it in the way that, we're your boss and we're going to put you under our thumb. Or you can word it in that, we're going to hear about this.
Yeah. Like liaison overseas.
The liaison is going to hear about your request for time off.
Okay.
The liaison overseas.
And I don't know whether we need
to
say for approval or denial, because they say, if you just don't like me, you're going to deny it. I don't want to. I'm really big on morale in this organization, because we've got a really good team here, and that's going to take work to keep it that way, and at the same time, do our job. As the governing body, but I don't want to be so strong in being I can. And I'll just go with public work can or planning can make you do something. They can make you do it. Doesn't mean they shall make you do it. You're supposed to go out there. I paid my fee. Come out, look at my situation. I don't have to make you put that in. And I see right now that isn't going to gain anybody anything other than spend your money. It's that you can, but I think that you don't, just because you can doesn't mean you have to.
I think so.
Coming across that way? I can go home and march my kids, set them up every day, and you know, dress them down before they go to school? Do I do that? No.
Yeah.
I can. I have the authority to, as the patriarch or the matriarch, to do that. But do I do that? No, because I'm going to lose the confidence of my kids. I'm going to lose my kids. They're off in another way. So I just, you know, it's just, we got to watch, be real careful on the wording here.
Do we want to pause here, having made it through D, and it's almost 11, and
we still have some,
you guys have some instruction now, that's things you can tweak, and maybe next time we'll bring in Arthur to talk about time tracking, and maybe JJ to talk about evaluation form. So that we can keep making progress on this, but stop there at D, 4D, and pick it up at our next chance. When it gets scheduled, when those guys are ready. Any objections to that path forward?
I say we pause and keep going.
Pause and then keep going?
At a future meeting.
Future meeting, yeah, I was going to say. Okay. How long do we pause? Okay, well then let's go back to the agenda real quick. We have some mining advisory board minutes. Item 4, we have like 3 of them from 3 meetings worth. So didn't know if you had any problem with those.
I just have a question on the August 13th minutes.
Yes, sir.
Both you and Commissioner Morgan were at that meeting. Was it noticed for that?
Yes.
I think it was on the hallway board. Yep.
Okay, we just want to make sure.
And Cali, I think I actually bowed out of that one, didn't I?
I just gave a presentation, was there for 5 minutes.
Oh, yeah, you were the one that bowed out.
You were both visitors.
Yeah.
Okay. County doesn't have an 8 in it on number 3.
Oh, just a typo.
Typo, yeah. On September 10th, Joseph County Board of Commissioners will consider issuing a proclamation naming the second week of October Joseph County Mining Heritage Week. Did we do that?
No,
I don't ever see that. If it's not a unique cultural economic, that was sounds to me like it was something that we would really need to consider. They brought the request to us, and I don't think we ever followed through on that. So that's one on there. So I don't know if we want to put that on an agenda item for discussion or admin, because it would be a proclamation that has to go to admin, right?
Well, yeah.
Yep.
That's that one.
Well, I think we should put it together. It's still, were they talking about 2020 October or
no?
They're talking about sooner.
They were talking about
September
19.
They wanted it to come out in October of 2019.
Nice catch. We should move that forward.
So it's just something that we need to follow up on that we didn't.
It's not a move forward. It's a.
It's a due.
Did we miss it?
We need to. We missed.
When is it?
Is it suggested for a certain time? Yeah, that's what I was asking.
It was. There was a specific time,
right?
Maybe there's a national recognition that they're aligning with.
So that would be appropriate to make sure that we
ask him if that's what it was. Okay, on November 12th, I think that was the only thing I had on that one. Yeah. On the November 12th, says Jay Meredith of American Mineral Research Inc. submitted an application for an exploratory permit for land owned by Josephine County. The county is supposed to act in response to said application within 30 days. So this advisory committee will have to call a special meeting during the 30-day window in order to inform the Board of Commissioners of the advisory committee's recommendation to the board. Did we ever get that? We did at a meeting here.
It's the next one.
Excellent. In the next minutes?
No, it was the meeting right after.
Oh, it's in our next...
That was the next meeting.
Okay. Next, our next meeting.
This has been scheduled for February.
This is November 12th. So, in other words, it's coming up in February, right?
Yes, it is.
All right, good.
Sounds like the 19th.
Thank
you. So, mark your calendars. Everyone's scheduled to be here that day.
Good.
Okay, if I may, so Annette and I and Dave Streeter are working to gather the materials together in preparation for that meeting.
Okay.
And so,
good.
I think we're getting pretty close on that point.
Because December 5th, it says. Dave Streeter presented his recommendation in response to the application for a report for a permit previously submitted by Jay Meredith on behalf of American Minerals. And I don't know, after lengthy discussion, most was made by Mike Bird to concur with SEDIC recommendations with few minor changes, and most was seconded Tom Kitcher, K. Kitcher, and the motion passed the unanimous. That was December 5th. So this is our next meeting. You've looked those over and made those necessary changes according to them. Did it go back to them?
It did on the following Tuesday.
Okay, yeah, good. All right.
And then after they approved it, I brought the board a copy just so everyone could see what had gone on in your.
And item number two, Dave Streeter, there was an R on the end of his name. There, I've read the minutes and made my record.
Well done, sir.
Not without the help of that.
So, yeah, and it says Tom was going to provide some language for the proclamation. I don't know if I ever saw that come through.
I didn't either.
Yeah.
So maybe that's probably why it didn't.
Probably how it died. So I'll have to reach out to him and see if he has that language. Make sure it's not in a past email of mine. Okay. Back to the agenda. We have the Economic Development Committee minutes. Don't know if you had a chance to look at them. I was at that meeting. Excuse me.
I didn't get a chance to read over these, but...
Yep.
You were there.
They do have that request that I've brought to you that we have never addressed to try and set aside 5 years' worth of economic development money or some funding, $150,000 a year, to be ready to match airport grants. So they have that for the runway extension requests, the two different lengths, the 400 and 1200 or whatever it is, 1,000.
How did the committee respond to that? I mean,
they made a motion, said, hey, we request the commissioners set aside that money.
Oh, good. I didn't read
and
that.
And so this is something we procedurally want to address this year. We're talking about liaison reports and roles. We also need to talk about what to do with motions from committees. Is there a place where we're going to address it on an agenda?
Or
is it the liaison's job not to drop that ball and keep it and bring it to the other two commissioners?
Well, technically, it should be the staff person bringing it to the board.
Right.
This request from the committee.
I happen to lack a staff person on that committee.
Oh, you're right.
Yeah, so I need... There's been a request to have Amber do it, and then there's some resistance from... Michael over in health to that. And
I have a meeting coming up with Michael Cavallaro and RV Cog about them helping us with some of the roles of grant writing to see if they can work with some of the stuff so that we determine what stuff Amber deals with in-house versus what we can refer to RV Cog to handle for us and contract with them to kind of our overflow that would free up Amber to maybe be able to do something else.
Right.
But the work right now is greater than one person. It's 50% public health, 50% the rest of the county. The 50% rest of the county is a greater ask than one person can do. So then do we contract with somebody else so that we're not paying for a second employee? And so we're going to meet with the grant person, Michael, and then Michael Weber, and Amber and I are going to meet and talk about grant writing procedure.
All right. Throw that in the soup.
Correct.
Great.
One of the things I like about the request, the formal request for airports and fairgrounds, is that we've had this in the past. There's an economic development chunk of money out there, and everybody seems to think they want to grab a little bit.
Oh, yeah, it's fish food.
We got a real pickle. We thought, how much money's left in that account? But to start out, really weren't watching that purse, and I don't want to get us to we as a board have committed...
Overcommitted.
$850,000 in requests for lighting at the Jubilee Park or whatever, and we only get $500,000 from economic development.
And that's why I think the request is strategic, because then it takes it off the front, says we're going to commit this for 5 years so that we don't have to scramble if he does get an approved grant. The money's there.
Does economic development have any presentation that budget?
Nope.
Nope.
I don't think so.
There is some accountability of what it pays for in the past, the memberships to chambers, So Ready, that type of stuff. But there's
pretty loose.
Yeah, pretty loose.
It's
a way of saying it.
I think I would, it's hard to say. If my wife comes to me and says, well, how much money do I have to work with in the grocery budget? I go, well, I don't know. There's
kids that want a yearbook, and Ryan wants new Converse All-Star stuff. I don't know what I would have left over. How's she supposed to go shopping without saying, oops, I still have checks left, but I don't have any money? Well, so I think it's pretty important. I'm glad that you're going that direction on actually earmarking money with a five-year lump so that those entities have something to work with.
We need to come up with a staff person to take on the tracking of economic development. Right now, I'm doing it, and so it's not getting completed.
Yeah.
And so there needs to be someone that, at the administrative level, that's watching that account.
So
that's able to give a report that says,
this is what we spent. Let's talk about what the right place for that is some other time. I have an 11 o'clock, by the way.
Yep.
But
you're late.
I am... we did a year with economic development being under you, with you making a recommendation that we have a partnership there. We figured that out. Let's figure out who that right person is.
Yeah.
Because Julie Schmelzer left, she had
right.
it. And so who's the right fit for that to be now?
Yeah, it's one that doesn't necessarily fall in a department, and so it has to have someone that has interest and passion for it, because they're going to add to their duties.
Well, they've got to go in asking for money with. Rather than just being, kind of this and that, you know, this is what I was told to say.
This is what it is.
Got to have some skin in the game.
And so I'm going to pull liaison reports off of today's agenda,
please,
number 6.
I don't have anything anymore.
We're using it as a bookmark now to talk about it, and we talked about liaison roles earlier. And so I just want to ask real quick, is anybody going to the elected officials lunch? Usually it says whose turn it is.
It's my
calendar,
turn.
And mine doesn't this time.
So. Yeah, it was my turn yesterday, but because it was a holiday, I didn't know that they moved it today until I got your email. So,
right. So are you making it?
We are not getting those emails unless somebody sends something individually. It goes to staff, not us.
I get them.
Okay. Thanks.
About election official.
I got your email because you sent something out.
Is someone going, I guess?
Yes, it's on my calendar.
You're going? Okay. And then I'm just going to be out of town this Thursday, Friday. Thought I'd tell you.
Make sure we get it. Note to that, and let's just make sure he's got enough time ratcheted up that he can.
Right. Time clock.
Exactly.
Under matters for commissioners, I want to just take a hat off to everybody in the organization on Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, and Monday.
Mm-hmm.
Fantastic. You know, although, you know, we had the warming centers available in case we had 16,000 people without power and predicted to be 25 degrees that night. We were ready in case it happened. It didn't happen, so I'm glad it didn't happen. But you know what? That doesn't take anything away from the Red Cross and everybody and Tamara that actually made space available at the fairground. It was a good exercise.
Yeah, good to exercise those muscles.
Without a hitch.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Good. So we're ready when it does happen and last longer. We'll be ready-er, which is good. Any other matters before we go?
I can
we'll
give them
this afternoon.
Afternoon.
Yeah. Okay. Then let's adjourn this meeting at 11:00.